Stocks across China plunge as cities are put into fresh COVID-19 lockdowns. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Coronavirus restrictions have gone into effect in two major Chinese cities as infections surge to levels not seen since the start of the pandemic. Residents in Shenzhen, that's China's tech hub, have been told to stay home while mass testing is carried out. Meanwhile, in Shanghai, some neighborhoods have been sealed off. That has all pushed Hong Kong's Hang Seng down 5% to its lowest level since 2016. The BBC's Andrew Wood explains what the situation is like across China.
Well, statistics suggest that there are now more COVID cases so far this year than there were in the whole of last year in China. We're seeing very, very big cities, cities of 17 million people being locked down. It's so bad that certainly the stock market here in Hong Kong, and of course the stock market here in Hong Kong is really a stock market mainly for China now, it fell by 5% in trading today. That's an extraordinary fall. I haven't seen anything like that since the worst days of the beginning of COVID. So it is a fairly serious problem now. And I think it's a worry for China that perhaps its zero tolerance policy may not be working, or else it is working, but the economic cost may be very, very high.
But these declines aren't just limited to worries about the economic impact of lockdowns. It also goes back to the crackdown by Beijing on the country's tech sector, too.
In the past couple of years, President Xi Jinping has become a lot tougher on, well, basically anyone he sees in the business world who might be a source of alternative power to him and to the Communist Party. So some of the most successful entrepreneurs, multi-billionaires, have basically been slapped down by the Communist Party and have told really to change their business models or to concentrate on things that the Communist Party wants. And then, of course, there's what's going on in Ukraine as well. Nobody's quite sure what this is going to mean to China at the moment. How much is China going to cooperate with Russia? How much is China going to turn into an alternative source of, well, customers for Russian oil? Or, for that matter, help it out financially, perhaps through connecting it up to its own financial system? So much uncertainty at the moment if you're an investor in China.
And the Chinese government has also been responding this morning to reports that Russia has asked China for military support for its invasion in Ukraine. What have government officials been saying?
Well, I think they're trying to play this down, really. I mean, America has warned China against helping Russia, and I think it's a bit of an embarrassment, really, that these allegations have come out from the West. Difficult for Beijing at the moment to try and get the balance right.
The BBC's Andrew Wood for us in Hong Kong. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thank you.
Checking some other numbers now, investors across Europe have struck a more optimistic tone today. The Stock 600 index is up 0.7% at this hour. The DAX in Germany is the region's biggest gainer, helped by a more than 6% jump in Volkswagen shares. The company said its operating profit doubled last year. Meanwhile, after surging to a 14-year high last week, oil prices are edging lower today. Brent and West Texas crude are trading at $109 and $105 a barrel. Uncertainty about supplies is continuing to linger, though, as sanctions threaten the global supply of crude. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, European countries have been thinking about ways they can wean themselves off of Russian oil and gas. The boss of America's largest natural gas producer, though, told the BBC he believes the U.S. can play a much bigger role in providing energy security for the world. The BBC's Michelle Fleury has that story.
The chief executive of EQT, a Pittsburgh-based company operating one of the world's biggest gas fields, said the U.S. could play a much bigger role in providing energy security for Europe and easily replace Russian supply lost because of the war and sanctions. Toby Rice said only political opposition to building pipelines and export facilities, partially driven by environmental concerns, is preventing his industry from helping Europe end its reliance on Russian gas.
It takes more time for us to permit than it actually takes for us to build these projects. We don't need the leadership to open their pocketbooks to make this happen. We're going to fund this plan fully. What we really need is their voice and just a very simple political signal, and we can be used to do a lot of great things, whether it's provide security to our allies in Europe or address global climate change.
Mr. Rice called on the Biden administration to streamline the process for getting pipeline projects approved. Europe gets more than a third of its gas from Russia and aims to replace it with alternative supplies over the next 5 years.
That's the BBC's Michelle Fleury reporting there. Talks between Russia and Ukraine are continuing today as the two sides try to find a way to end nearly 3 weeks of war. Russia, though, has continued its assault on residential areas of Ukraine, including a 9-story apartment building that was set on fire in the capital, Kyiv, this morning. As the fighting continues, people are preparing for the possibility of a long, drawn-out conflict with Russia, despite those diplomatic negotiations. And some are determined to help their loved ones survive, physically, emotionally, and financially. This kitchen in East London, where a pot of tea is now being prepared, belongs to chef and cookbook author Olia Hercules. It's seen it all: recipe testing for award-winning cookbooks and gatherings with friends. But 2 weeks ago, the cookware was stowed away, and now only a forgotten pot of food lingers on the stove. The optimism, once plentiful in the chef's haven, has melted away, because now this kitchen is a war room.
Thank you so much. That's perfect.
For the past 2 weeks, Olia has been trying her best to man her battle station. She was born and raised in Ukraine, but has lived the past 20 years in London. While her immediate family resides with her in the UK, her extended family, including her parents and brother Sasha, are all back in southern Ukraine.
My brother messaged me and he said that he's not going to leave, that the situation is extremely desperate and that he needs to go and join the territorial defenses. But he realized that when you join, you're only given a rifle, and that's it. There was no protective gear. There was no helmets, no protective vests, not even knee pads, no radios, you know, nothing.
That conversation spurred Olia into action. In just 2 days, she collected nearly $150,000 to buy as much protective gear as she could. Olia and her team of friends and volunteers found a complex route to getting supplies to her brother and his team. She told me she hoped it would arrive the day we were speaking, and as if on cue...
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
There you go. Oh, it's my brother.
Can oh, yeah, okay? yeah.
Alo?
He got the supplies she sent.
Honestly, to hear his voice right now, he just feels so like he's just like, yeah, this is so amazing. Like, we're going to be okay, you know?
A moment of elation. But for Olia, this victory is only the start.
My long-term plan is to raise money to build cookery schools for teenage children post-school so they can learn a skill, so they will be able to make money for themselves. And also, food is so incredibly therapeutic. Maybe it will also be of help in a psychological way as well.
Olia told me that while she can't right now focus on food or cooking, she has helped start a campaign called Cook for Ukraine. It encourages people all over the world to try their hand at cooking or baking Ukrainian dishes. But more importantly, she said, gathering around the table to educate each other about the war and strategize ways to help those affected. The movement has so far raised more than $230,000 to benefit the children's charity UNICEF. There's much more of my conversation with Olia. I'll tweet a link and some photos. You can find me on Twitter at Victoria Craig. For now in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.